When I was a little kid, and people asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, I gave them all sorts of wild answers. I told a teacher I wanted to be a couch potato so I could spend my days snuggled up under blankets in the living room. I told my best friend Emily's mom I wanted to be a cookie taste tester, because that's what Emily wanted to be. And I told my dad I wanted to be a knife, so I could cut my grilled cheese sandwiches in two perfect triangles, instead of the four dinky squares he always prepared. Of course, this answer earned me raised eyebrows and an explanation about how a girl is a living, breathing thing that can be cut, and a knife is a sharp piece of steel that does the cutting. But now that I've discovered most of my childhood was a lie, I'm starting to think my younger self was onto something with the knife answer. Because in the past few weeks at Academy Abscondidi, I've come as close to being a knife, or being stabbed by one, as anyone can get. I shut the door to the infirmary behind me and head down an empty hall that's lit by torches. I roll my sleeve down over the bandage on my forearm, where the nurse slathered my wound with some kind of strong poultice that smells of pine needles and clay. She kept telling me how lucky I was to have survived the fall from the tree in the courtyard and with no broken bones. She tisked a lot and said, "You young people take everything for granted." I doubt she would have used the word lucky, though, if she knew I was thrown from the tree because the lion family wanted me dead. As I turned the corner into another silent hallway, I noticed the torches have burned down, leaving the corridor ahead of me almost completely black. I slow to a stop, eyeing the dying embers on one torch suspiciously. Shouldn't someone have replaced them? And where are the academy guards? There's usually one posted in every hallway. I frown, wondering if I should head back to the infirmary, when I hear a faint, gurgling noise. I lean forward, reluctant to step into the unlit hallway, as if the dark might bite me. For a beat, all is silent, and I wonder if I only imagined the sound. Then a gasping cough breaks the quiet, and my adrenaline spikes.
"November!"
a strangled voice calls. And everything in me sinks. I recognize that voice. "Ash!" I shout, and my previous hesitation disappears. I sprint full speed into the dark. My boots click rhythmically against the stone, and my breathing accelerates with my pace. I run with my hand along the wall to keep my footing as I chase Ash's distressed voice. Ahead of me on the left, I can just make out a strip of light, the sliver of space under a closed door. And the choking sounds get louder as I near it. I grasp at the door latch in the dark, throwing my weight against the heavy wood. The hinges whine as it opens, and I burst into the room, only to stop again so fast that I almost lose my balance. My chest heaves as I fight to regain control over my runaway heartbeat. The room is enormous, with stone walls and a high arched ceiling. It's oddly devoid of furniture, except for the far end, where there are a platform and a large, lavish chair that resembles a throne. The walls are hung with fancy portraits and ornate tapestries. But what stopped me in my tracks isn't the architecture or the decor. It's the dead bodies. My eyes sweep across the expansive floor, and my hand flies to my mouth to keep from crying out. Most are people I've never seen, a sea of unknown faces, their features contorted in pain in their last moments. But then, I spot him at the far end of the room. Ash, clawing at his throat as his mouth foams. Lying next to him is Layla, and beside her are Inez, Aria, and Mateo. They're splayed out, unmoving, their backs arched, bloody marks scratched across their throats. And standing in front of them all, with his back to me, is a tall man with silver hair. He starts to laugh, long and loud. "No, no, no!" I sputter in one fast breath, my pulse battering my temples as I frantically weave around bodies, panic fumbling my footing. Layla's delicate hand is still clutching at her throat as if she's fighting to get air, but her eyes are closed, and she's perfectly still. A cry escapes my lips, and I trip over someone's arm, my hands skidding on the cold stone floor. I immediately right myself. Ash's desperate eyes meet mine, and he chokes again, reaching out for me. The man with the silver hair looks down at Ash as he struggles.